Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're going over Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, chapters 13 and 14, Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw, and Snape's Grudge. In these chapters, Draco is a jerk. What else is new? And Snape is a jerk. What else is new?
Right. Harry's a bit of a jerk, too, I think, in these chapters, in Snape's chapter, but we'll get there.
Yes. So what'd you think of, we started off with Ron and Hermione basically super mad at each other right now because Scabbers is presumed dead. Do you believe it?
No, I don't. I am not convinced Scabbers is dead. I don't know why. It feels like they keep talking about it and it's caused such a rift in their friendship that I just feel like Ron's going to feel like a jerk. Eventually. I mean, I agree with Hagrid. Animals are going to do what animals are going to do. But I don't know if, obviously, like, Hermione is a little careless with Crookshanks, and she should have that awareness as well. And also, I wish she had the little bit of thought that maybe Ron cares about Scabbers just as much as she cares about Crookshanks. So... this is an unfortunate little drama, but I don't think Scabbers is dead. I just don't know where he is. That's all I know.
Yeah, well, I think I've learned in, these books go towards mystery. So I think even when I first read it, I was like, habeas corpus, like, produce the body.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
So, like, Harry is pretty sure that Crookshanks has eaten Scabbers, and Hermione loses it on Harry, too.
Yeah, Hermione is like the definition of stress in these. Like she's kind of done it to herself a little bit, but Harry is definitely caught in the middle of all this drama. And I think he does a pretty good job of, siding with Ron, it seems like. I don't know.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm kind of on Ron's side at this point.
Yes.
Even though we don't have a body, like, it's very heavy circumstantial evidence. And I think I would also be in Ron's position where, like, if I was dealing with someone who is as stubborn as Hermione, I would also need some reassurance that this person cares about our friendship more than her pride.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Or... only unless if, Hermione wasn't such a proud, stubborn individual just on general principle and her cat was the only thing that she was, like, super stubborn about.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe it's like the way Hagrid says, oh, some people can be stupid about their pets.
Yes.
If that was, like, her one character flaw, but, in regards to divination and everything else, like, her pride and stubbornness... is all over the place. And again, as we know, her stress from taking so many classes is just making it worse. But yeah, I tend to veer, at least in this reading of this go around, I am more on Ron's side.
I kind of felt that way too. I think for the past couple of times I've been like, oh, chill out, Ron. But I reframed it in my mind if it were like a dog in a attacking a cat or something like that. And I'm just like, we have pets. We love them. And we should respect that other people feel the same about them and have the awareness that maybe a rat or a mouse or whatever and a cat aren't going to go together. So maybe let's be a little cautious and respectful, but Hermione's pride gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. So in an attempt to distract Ron, Harry persuades him to come along to the Gryffindor practice so that he can get a look at and eventually ride the Firebolt. And Madame Hooch is just fawning over it.
Yeah, the adults are a little silly in this situation, too, I think.
And also, Madame Hooch just falls asleep during practice. Great security.
Yeah. And Harry, speaking of distractions, catches a glimpse of or hears about Cho Chang. I don't know if we see her quite yet, but
yeah, later on in the chapter. But yes, this is the introduction of Cho Chang, who is a fourth year, so she's a year above him. And let's see what we got. Yeah, she's like, on the other hand, she rides a Comet 260, which is going to look like a joke next to the Firebolt. And again, I'm kind of wondering, I never really thought about it this way before, like the pure nature of, again, how old brooms are and, you know, how they have different, like, is it truly fair for Harry to have a Firebolt and Cho not to be able to have a broom, if not a Firebolt, the exact equivalent, or at least of the same caliber in some capacity? Because isn't that, like, wouldn't that be cheating?
I agree. I thought, you know, I didn't, this might shock everybody, but I didn't play a lot of team sports as a kid. But from my recollection, it wasn't like everybody was bringing their, like, you know, I couldn't even find a great comparison to play this, you know, sport against somebody. I guess you kind of always did have, like, the more wealthy schools versus the kind of schools that didn't have a lot of money. But when we're talking about individuals, I thought you just kind of played with the team's equipment. So I can't think about, like, in the competitive world, in the muggle world, what the thing would be.
This is like racing a beat up beetle against a Ferrari.
Yeah. Which it's not going to, it's the competition's unfair, and you get the feeling that, like, it will, obviously they all know the Firebolt's going to, like, just defeat this other broom. It's like, well, it sounds like he's got a little bit of an advantage. And these were the chapters that kind of made me go, Harry's just kind of got this cloak of impenetrability. And this was one of the other things. I'm sure they would let any kid have a Firebolt should they be able to get one, but I don't know.
Again, just the nature of Quidditch and the fact that it requires brooms, and it's clearly very much, they do provide, you know, school brooms, but clearly they suck and clearly right. Don't have the budget for it. So everyone, you know, each has their own personal broom. So I don't know, like, what's the equivalent? Like, I don't know, like, if, you know, one person has a really nice bowling ball and the other team has really shitty bowling balls.
I guess. I couldn't think of something, and that just is a testament. I was thinking of, like, playing softball. I played softball for a minute, and I guess if somebody had a really great bat and somebody else didn't, I don't know.
I never really thought about it that much, you know, how they balance, you know, the sheer nature of the piece of equipment, the broomstick, with the person's, like, skill level. And basically, everyone's going around that it doesn't matter if someone gets a really fancy broom and you don't. Sucks to be you. Tough cookies.
Yeah, that's kind of the attitude. It's like, yeah. Good for Gryffindor, good for all, I guess, of Gryffindor.
And of course, Oliver Wood is ecstatic. You know, he's so excited and is determined that they're going to win. And he's like, you fixed your, like, dementia problem, right, Harry?
Yeah, he's. I think it was evident in that last chapter that he is more concerned about the outcome of the Quidditch match than Harry's mental health, but that's all right.
Mm-hmm. So Harry and Ron stay behind after the team goes to locker rooms to give Ron, you know, the ability to ride the broomstick for a little bit. And again, Madame Hooch falls asleep. Sirius Black could just come and do whatever, shoot Harry out of the sky.
Right. And, let me see. I think I'm too far, but So he sees a pair of eyes in the darkness, which, just a little compliment to Harry for trying to help cheer his friend up. I thought that was really nice. But they encounter Crookshanks, because I guess Crookshanks has been MIA since the Scabbers attack incident.
Yep. And it's like, see, she's still letting him wander around wherever he wants, probably washing down scabbers with a couple of birds now.
Yeah. Well, and then they kind of just let Crookshanks be and wander back off. But he's still out there.
And so, yeah, so it seemed as though the Slytherins didn't know that Harry had a firebolt. Like, I guess they were trying, they were keeping it really, really secret. And so, you know, everyone's like, ooh, ah, can I just hold it?
This was like the grossest part to me, because I guess maybe, maybe this is evidence of me growing up and not like in a super affluent house. But I just don't like the fawning over something, you know, a thing like this. It's just like, okay, everybody.
I see. Like, again, because again, just the nature of the equipment you have to use for this game, there is a classism to it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think Ron Weasley, you know, that's probably why he was so excited. He knows he's not going to be getting any firebolts or fancy brooms for any sort of, you know, present worthy holiday. So, and I was trying to have a memory. It kind of made me think of like show and tell a little bit, or I remember a story I heard, I think it was from my husband, about a kid being asked about, like, you had to stand up and report on your summer vacation, and one kid left crying because he wasn't able to afford it. So, anyway.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, that's probably not the thing to ask anymore, you know, so.
Yeah, the only thing I think of is the classism in horseback riding.
Okay, yeah.
Not because I think people are trying to be classy, it's just the nature of the upkeep of an animal of that size. It's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the combination of being, like, down to earth, but also classes, because, again, like, you have to get down and dirty and, you know, get thrown off the horse and everything, but yeah, that's all I can really, you know, compare it to.
It's just funny because we also, like, realize this is another family that could afford it. Draco Malfoy's family, as far as we know, he doesn't have a firebolt. And he definitely isn't thrilled by the appearance of the firebolt with Mr. Harry Potter.
But yeah, even with horseback riding, you know, just the inflation of, you know, sports and equipment and things like that in prices. Because my mother bought her horse, you know, when she was like, you know, in the 80s. Mm. And she was from a very famous, well-stock racing thoroughbred. Like her grandfather, the horse's, you know, our horse's grandfather was like a racing thoroughbred. So from a top of the line, you know, pedigree, was able to purchase her. She was only 3 years old, three-year-old filly. And my mom got her for like $3,500.
Oh, okay.
If you think about what it would take to buy a horse of that pedigree and status now, it would be like $20,000
plus. Wow.
So, yeah.
I had no idea. I know I think about like with houses and things like that, prices, it's just,
yeah.
Oh, money.
Anyway, so even Draco Malfoy cannot resist coming over.
Yeah, he's got to check this. He's got to check the broom out. But I think he's, you know, he wants to just kind of give Harry a bad time about it, too, because he's poking. He still cannot get over the fact that Harry got freaked out by the Dementors. Like, get over it, man.
Goodness. Yeah, well, that's all he has to work with. So he has to cling to it. But one thing I noticed, it's shame it doesn't come with a parachute in case you get too near a Dementor. And I just thought that was interesting. I never really thought about it in readings before. But again, Draco Malfoy is a pureblood. And in this book, you know, they go out of their way. Harry, the writer, goes out of his way to show that a lot of purebloods have no notion of, like, muggle contraptions. So how does Draco know this word? But then I remember, you know, Harry explaining, like, you know, Draco bragging about being able to fly, and if you had least believed him, he spent, you know, his life avoiding helicopters on a broom. So Malfoy, for all he pretends to be, you know, the pure blood, doesn't know anything. I think at the very least he has done a little research about all things muggle related to, like, planes and aviation and the sky.
It's like his secret, like, I this is a secret, like,
guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I was like, why did I go with that? But he's like sitting there doing muggle studies when nobody's around. And he's like, oh, man, or like whatever they use. So I think that's my fan fiction that I did not write down, that Malfoy is a secret like muggle obsessive reader. And right,
or at least, again, aviation enthusiast.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Again, Quidditch chapter. Which we don't need to go, we don't need to follow, you know, Lee Jordan's commentary, but what's the big thing that happens during the Quidditch match?
So, again, with being a kind of an idiot, I think two things. We get Harry's first, like, and I'm a romantic, so I love any little hint of romance, his encounter with Cho Chang, and I thought that was interesting that they're, you know, we're finally talking about these things. It would have been too early and not appropriate, but, and also just kind of how he manages that competitively. But the other, of course, the biggest thing is he believes he sees a Dementor and uses his Patronus charm, which good for him.
Yeah. And I really like the fact that it shows that, you know, the minute Cho sees what she thinks is a Dementor, she immediately drops the competitiveness and tries to warn Harry.
Yeah, that's an admirable trait.
Yeah, so she shows good sportsmanship in the same way that the Hufflepuff Seeker did Cedric Diggory.
Yes, that is so funny you said that, because that's immediately who I thought it was.
Yeah, so it seems everyone except the Slytherins, you know, are capable of, again, good sportsmanship and, you know, being able to put the competitiveness, you know, aside if there's something like really crazy or weird going on.
Yeah, I feel like the Slytherins just keep getting this message of like, you're better than everybody. Just remember that. You're better than everybody. And so you got to treat everybody like dirt. So I don't know. But the Ravenclaws are sportsmanlike in their efforts here.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Harry is able to produce a Patronus and catches the snitch.
Yes, knew that was coming, probably.
Of course. And so he's like, yay, I didn't feel anything. They didn't affect me at all. And then Lupin kind of, you know, breaks it down that those weren't really Dementors and sees that it was Draco, Crabbe, Goyle, and also the Slytherin Quidditch captain, Marcus Flint. Yeah, okay. How would you feel about this? Because you could go either way. Like, with Harry, like, if you were in this position, would you feel disappointed that you thought that you had really taken on a Dementor and realized you really didn't? Or would you feel, like, really smug and vindicated that you were able to disorient Malfoy in this way?
I would probably relish that fact a little bit because I also am just flabbergasted that this is not an offense that would lead to expulsion, because I just think that it's Malfoy's depravity knows no limits, apparently. But yeah, as far as here, I guess I wouldn't be as disappointed because it was, I think I would be more satisfied the fact that I made it happen. And I know Lupin's kind of like, yeah, well, you know, pump the brakes, buddy. It's, you know, it wasn't real. I just couldn't believe how irritated I was with Malfoy and crew here to go to this length to freak out Harry. The severity of this situation is, you know, is pretty intense, and he's making very light of it. So
yeah, because they're trying to impersonate a creature that freaks out everybody,
including Malfoy. I mean,
Harry's a special case, but these things freak out everybody,
right? Yeah, so
this would be like someone like pretending, oh, I'm gonna wear ski mask and carry machete, but I'm not gonna do anything,
right? It's not, to me, it's kind of like I think about another famous Harry, Prince Harry of Wales. I think a few years back, he went to a costume party dressed up as Hitler and got a lot of hell for it. I am not making the equivalent of a Dementor in Hitler. I know I am not a Holocaust denier. I'm just saying, like, there are things that you just don't mess with. Like, you don't show up to a party dressed up as Hitler. I would think that maybe in the wizarding world, you don't just show up as a Dementor because you think you're going to give your friends a laugh. Like, it's a very, they're very serious and horrible entities in this world.
Again, I was too young to, like, kind of notice or hear about Prince Harry and all his crazy exploits of, you know, he's only finally, you know, mellowed out, gotten married and all those things. And I think in some interviews he's admitted, like, yeah, I went crazy because, you know, all the stuff with my mom.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and I was definitely of the age where all of that was very, I think I'm about the same age as Prince William when he was pretty cute. But yeah, when Diana died, I understand sad things, but I don't know. I remember also a couple of girls at another party dressed up as the Twin Towers. It's just sometimes it's like, come on, people, you know, think a little before you do these things.
Yeah. So, at least Draco gets in enough trouble that McGonagall is like, I'm not, you know, settling this with Snape. Like, you're going to go to Dumbledore about this.
Good for McGonagall. Proud of her in this moment.
Yep. And so, yeah, so beating Ravenclaw allows them to still be in the running for the Quidditch Cup.
And then they have, like, I guess the school, the Hogwarts version of a little rager. They have this, like, all-night party. I don't know.
Yeah, like, you know, I think Fred and George, like, smuggle food from the kitchen.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're just going absolutely insane. And Hermione's not even joining in. You know, first of all, she's, you know, doing all of her, you know, all the examples Harry gives of us of when he sees her studying, it's all about the muggle studies, like home life and social habits of British muggles.
I wonder why.
Yeah, like, it's sad. Like, I wish at least we could have gotten a little piece into her ancient runes or her arithmancy classes.
I know. Yeah, that would have been really helpful for the end of this podcast, too. So.
Yeah. But anyway, so, and Ron is, again, I'm still siding with Ron in terms of the principle of this fight, but Ron is mean in regards to what he says of its scabbards hadn't just been eaten. He could have had some of these fudge flies. He really used to like them. And Hermione burst into tears and runs into the dormitory.
Yeah. This is just, this friend fight is just such a bummer. And I'm glad Hagrid calls Harry and Ron out here in a little bit. But, and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's messy.
Because Ron is like, if she just acted like she was sorry, but she'll never admit she's wrong, Hermione. She's still acting like Scabbers has gone on vacation or something.
So, I mean, like, thus far, he hasn't received an apology from Hermione, has he?
No, he hasn't. Like, Hermione's still steadfast that you don't know that my cat ate your rat. Like, she won't even entertain it as a possibility.
That's, I mean, coming from a person who apologizes for everything, which is me, like, this is like a rationale that I'm just so, I don't understand. I guess I would feel so awful. I don't know, but I'm also very protective of my pets. I don't know. Like I said, I hate this.
Again, this was the one thing Hermione was stubborn about, but no, right. Ron has a point. This is all about her personality. And I think also the stress of her classes. Like, she has, like, tunnel vision where she cannot put herself in anyone else's position at this point.
Right. Yeah. So she's only in that headspace.
Busy trying not to completely rip apart the time space continuum of the universe.
A lot of pressure there on this girl. So
seriously.
Yeah.
Like, who authorized for a 13-year-old to have the power of time?
McGonagall, who makes these wild, I mean, you know, of course you know that, but makes these weird decisions sometimes. But okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so the rager finally calms down. They go to bed, and Ron screams bloody murder.
So Sirius Black has visited Ron in the night, and terrifying, wakes everybody up with this visit.
Rips apart his bed curtains.
Why?
So, yeah, we don't know. And so everyone tries to say that it's just a bad dream, and it's like, a dream didn't rip apart my curtains. And so, like, they're all arguing about it. Percy comes down, gets involved, and they don't even, like, try and get an adult. They're making so much racket that McGonagall shows up, and she still thinks the rager is going on. And it's like, I'm happy Gryffindor won, too, but this is ridiculous.
It's how I feel about people with fireworks right now. Like, yay, America, but shut up. I'm trying to sleep. So people are loving those fireworks. I understand McGonagall.
Honestly, with, you know, how things are in terms of reckoning of, you know, again, trying to make sense of our past and reconcile, you know, the distasteful elements of the cast of the past, I haven't been following the news too much. But honestly, I was expecting like more like protest and possibly a riot somewhere.
You know, that's really funny. I'm surprised, and I haven't been very attentive to the news, but I was kind of wondering where the information about the 4th of July just, I don't know, Canada Day just happened as well. And there's been a lot of news about the Indigenous people and Canada Day, things like that. I can't speak very well to it. I haven't read enough about it, but I wondered about that with the 4th as well.
Yeah. But anyway, so Ron tells McGonagall, and McGonagall's like, don't be ridiculous. How could he have gotten in? And Ron's like, ask Sir Cadogan. And so McGonagall goes and asks Sir Cadogan, did you let a man in? Of course I did. He had all the passwords written on a little piece of paper.
Yeah. I knew. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Which person, she said, her voice shaking, was abysmally foolish person, wrote down this week's passwords and left them lying around.
Of course it was Neville. Like, of course. If anybody didn't think that that's what was going, who it was going to be, you haven't been paying attention. Because poor Neville. I felt so bad for him. He's just trying to remember what, because isn't this is the same guy who likes to change the password like every other day. And poor guy.
Yeah. And honestly, Neville is pretty brave to admit it in front of everyone. Because honestly, even if I had done it, I wouldn't have raised my hand in the middle of everyone. Like, I would have gone to McGonagall and just been like, yeah, it was me. I was really dumb. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't admit my shame to the whole Gryffindor common room.
Yeah, I guess it would depend on the day with me, but that was a pretty big, I mean, thankfully that didn't go as poorly as it could have. So, poor Neville.
Yep. Chapter 14, Snape's Grudge. No one in Gryffindor Tower slept that night. They knew the castle was being searched again, and the whole house stayed awake in the common room waiting to hear whether Black had been caught. Professor McGonagall came back at dawn to tell them that he had again escaped.
So the fallout, basically, from this incident is pretty good for Ron, but and pretty, you know, I guess Sir Caddington, who we appreciate his silliness, has been replaced by the fat lady portrait. I guess she's like had a moment to calm down because she was pretty shook up earlier.
Yeah, and so the fat lady agrees to come back on the condition that she's given extra protection. And so they hire two security trolls that, like, you know, skulk the hallway with their clubs.
Yes. Hey, that sounds pretty scary. I probably wouldn't cross that either. So, and good for her for asking for the protection that she needs. Hopefully she doesn't change the password. Maybe she's been advised by faculty, like, maybe don't change the password every 5 minutes or whatever. So,
This is true. And so this, you know, with Sirius Black coming and going, Harry's like thinking, could he be using the secret passage that I use?
Oh, this is the chapter that Harry made me mad. But yeah, there's a possibility of that.
And Ron is just like, you know, if there was a break-in at Honeydukes, we would have heard about it. It's fine.
Okay, so this is, some of these conversations remind me of like just two teenage boys just like spurning each other on or whatever. But anyway, so there he's kind of dismissive of it.
It's just, you know, Ron is getting a little bit of attention, you know, by, you know, being Sirius Black's quote unquote victim. And I know it's kind of some, you know, presumed that he must have been going for Harry and just chose the wrong bed.
Yeah, and Ron is loving this attention. I mean, I guess I thought about it and his kind of position in the Weasley family order. He probably didn't get as much attention as his brothers. He's always next to Harry Potter, who's always getting the attention. So he's just really embracing this moment here.
Yep, his little 15 minutes of fame.
Yes.
Neville was in total disgrace. Professor McGonagall was so furious with him, she had banned him from all future Hogsmeade visits, given him detention, and forbidden anyone to give him the password into the tower. Poor Neville was forced to wait outside the common room every night for somebody to let in him, while the security trolls leered unpleasantly at him. None of these punishments, however, came close to matching the one his grandmother had sent for him. 2 days after Black's break-in, she sent Neville the worst thing a Hogwarts student could receive over breakfast, a howler.
I think we had a feeling that was coming, too. I also am a little irritated with the level. I mean, I feel like Malfoy got off pretty easy compared to this. And I know Neville made an absent-minded mistake, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it was a little much.
I'm not sure how I feel. Because on the one hand, of course, I just feel bad that it's Neville.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that is a really big screw up.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a real world equivalent.
Well, and especially under the, like, maybe if this was Black's first break-in, then maybe right. I would think, you know, yeah, this is going overboard. But they already have the context of, you know, the whole reason they got Sir Cadogan was because Sirius Black slashed the portrait hole, you know, right. The lady's portrait. So they already knew that Sirius Black was like, or that Gryffindor Tower was on Sirius Black's radar.
Yeah, and maybe the better approach for Neville would have been to just find a buddy or something and been like, can you please tell me the password? Like, can you help me out or something? I don't know. But yeah.
Yep.
It just feel bad for him. So, yeah.
So on that same day of Neville's howler, Hedwig gives Harry a letter from Hagrid inviting him to tea at his hut.
Always good to hear from Hagrid. This is kind of a little different Hagrid visit, I think. I think every Hagrid visit is, it's kind of like Hagrid's the emotional consciousness or something here, but... Hagrid basically wants to talk to them about what a couple of jerks they've been to Hermione. He also is, you know, about to go to Buckbeak's trial, but
yeah, mainly... this is in fact, again, up till this point, this is the one time that Hagrid is showing his, like, you know, I'm an adult and your kids are doing something really stupid.
And he has a good approach about it. I think that, you know, I think a lot of people a lot of adults will just talk down to the kids. But he goes about it in a way that if I were doing something similar, even as a non-child, I would hope somebody would approach me in a similar manner. I'm trying to find what exactly he says to her, but... I think you already quoted it. I'm just trying to find the quote again.
So yeah, so he goes into telling them about Hermione. She's been coming down to visit me a lot since Christmas, been feeling lonely. First you weren't talking to her because of the firebolt, and now you're not talking to her because her cat ate Scabbers, Ron interjected angrily. Because her cat acted like all cats do, continued Hagrid doggedly. She's cried a fair few times, you know, going through a rough time at the moment, bitten off more than she can chew, if you ask me, all the work she's trying to do. Still found time to help me with Buckbeak's case, mind. She's found some really good stuff for me. Reckon he'll stand a good chance now.
Hermione is doing the most at Hogwarts right now. And I'm glad she's helping Hagrid with his case. I think that's very sweet. I think what Hagrid's also trying to do is just to say, like, be supportive of your friend, don't treat her poorly. She's got a lot going on.
Yeah. Really upset she was when Black nearly stabbed you, Ron. She's got her heart in the right place, Hermione has, and you two not talking to her. And then, if she just get rid of the cat, I'd speak to her again. But she's still sticking up for it. It's a maniac, and she won't hear a word against it. Ah, well, people can be a bit stupid about their pets, said Hagrid wisely. And it's just so hilarious that this is coming from Hagrid, of all people.
Right, yeah. And I mean, he obviously says with, that, I think,
with Norbert and Aragog and everything else.
Yeah, he knows what he's saying, and he knows it applies to him as well. So I think that was, I appreciated Hagrid being the voice of reason here, and maybe at least giving Harry and Ron something to think about.
So yeah, they finish up their tea with Hagrid, go back to the castle, and so they're talking. Ron's brings up the next Hogsmeade weekend, and Hermione's just like, if you go, I'm going to tell Professor McGonagall about that map.
Good for her, I thought in this moment, because Ron is being an idiot, and Harry's going to go along with it. And, you know, even for the, I guess, one approach to this situation, you can tell, as Hagrid just said, that Hermione actually cares about her friends still, even though they're acting like jerks, and saying, like, don't do this, and I'm going to tell on you, basically, because you're making bad decisions, and I don't want to sit back and watch that happen. And that, of course, does not sit well.
Yeah, and honestly, if her name wasn't already mud with Ron and Hermione at this point, or with Ron and Harry at this point, in combination of the Firebolt and the Scabbers Crookshank things, I think she would have made good on her threat.
I think so, too. I agree.
Yeah, but I think in this way she's being a little selfish that, you know, I'm going to tattle about the Firebolts and they're going to be pissed for a little bit, but then they'll get the Firebolt back if it's safe and it'll be fine. So and she's only 13, I think she's terrified that if she were to go to McGonagall, even though that would be the right thing to do, that she would just, I think she would be, she's terrified that that would irreparably, Ron and Harry would never speak to her again.
Yeah, because I think you're right. And you've mentioned before, we don't really know a lot about any of her female friendships, if she has any at all. So she's kind of, when you've been ousted of the trio, it's a pretty lonely place.
Mm-hmm. So on the Saturday morning of the Hogsmeade visit, you know, Harry wishes Ron goodbye and tries to sneak into the, you know, witch statue, but bumps into Neville.
Poor Neville. He's, I guess, because he can't go to Hogsmeade. And
yes, he has lost that privilege.
Yeah, and he's excited now.
Yeah, Neville's trying to, you know, get Harry to, like, hang out with him in some capacity. He's like, you can help me with my vampire essay. I don't understand the garlic thing. Neither do I, Neville. No one understands the garlic thing. It's just some weird thing that Bram Stoker threw in Dracula.
We don't understand the garlic thing, and we read about vampires a lot, and we talked all about them, and yeah, I don't know. Are there vampires in Italy? What's a place that uses a lot of garlic? Don't they string garlic in certain places, not solely just to keep vampires away? I don't know.
I have no idea. All I remember is Van Helsing, you know, gave the garlic blossom thingies to Lucy and whatever.
Yeah.
And they are interrupted by who? Our gothic incel emo Snape.
Of course. Snape's got... It's his two least favorite people, Neville and Harry Potter.
Exactly. And so Snape, it's pretty obvious that Snape does not know about the secret passageway that's right here. But he's at least smart enough to know that there's something of significance about the statue.
Yes, he has figured out that much, and I believe he's questioning their intentions here. Yeah.
So they scamper away, and Harry is able to double back, and then finally can get to the... looks at the map and see that the little Severus Snape dot is back in his office.
And then he bails on Neville, and that's where he made me mad. He's made two decisions thus far that made me mad. One, to even go to Hogsmeade, and the second is where he kind of tricks Neville, and I think Neville's had enough right now that this is just kind of mean.
Yeah, like, Neville could have used some camaraderie right now, Harry.
Yeah, come on, man.
So, but he finally makes it into Honeydukes and Hogsmeade. And so they go around visiting the Zonko's joke shop, you know, the post office, you know, everything. And ultimately they go visit, and they're outside the Shrieking Shack, which is considered to be the most haunted dwelling in Britain.
I'm really glad Harry mentioned this because we're so surrounded by haunted things in this. I mean, as, I guess if you want to say haunted is a ghost residing in a space, I mean, Hogwarts is haunted, you know. So the fact that there's a haunted house in that that everybody is calling a haunted house, I don't know. I just thought this was a cool thing too.
Yeah, because it's like, what is haunted in with, again, with the context of what is the standard that requires even wizards to consider a dwelling haunted?
Right. It's got to be pretty, pretty next level. And from what Ron says, that's exactly it. That even the ghosts are scared of this shrieking shack.
Mm-hmm. But they're not there alone for long. They eventually see Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle coming down the hill on the other side. And Malfoy is, you know, smugly, you know, congratulating himself on, you know, basically sabotaging, you know, Hagrid and Buckbeak.
Yeah, real winner, Malfoy.
Yeah, and so they see Ron, and of course they think Ron is by himself.
Yes, because Harry was smart enough to bring the invisibility cloak for a while, but then his pride gets in the way.
So Ron or Harry decides to start chucking mud at them.
Yeah, you know, he should have done this. I mean, I guess this is just, he's pissed off and he wants to probably get back at Malfoy for the trickery, which I'm irritated that Malfoy is at Hogsmeade given what he did earlier. And so he's trying to get back at him, but
yeah. Or even if he wants to like mess with Malfoy, you don't do something that causes physical contact. You know, the way he screws up is he trips Crabbe or Goyle, and by doing so, you know, the invisibility cloak, you know, slides off his head. So it's like, right. You know, you could have still just done the mud projectiles and, you know, they wouldn't have known anything.
Right. Yeah. Just he got in his own way, and the consequences are that he gets to basically haul ass back to Hogwarts to try to get ahead of this situation.
Yeah. And of course, who is the one person to catch him the minute he's back in the castle?
Good old Snape.
Yeah, good old Snape, and drags Harry back to his office.
his cool dungeon where he's got more gross things in jars, it sounds like.
Exactly. And Harry's like, it sounds like Malfoy's having Malfoy is not having hallucinations, snarled Snape.
Why Harry decides to like try to call Malfoy, you know, think that Snape is not going to defend Malfoy in this situation is really silly on Harry's part.
Well, I don't know. Again, Snape doesn't know about the invisibility cloak. So he's, just the nature of it. Again, there are magical explanations, but the fact that Draco saw something, I don't know. Of course, you know, Snape's not going to fall for it, but yeah.
Right.
Anyway, oh, I love this part. So, he said, straightening up again, everyone from the Minister of Magic downward has been trying to keep famous Harry Potter safe from Sirius Black, but famous Harry Potter is a law unto himself. Let the ordinary people worry about his safety. Famous Harry Potter goes where he wants to, with no thought for the consequences.
I very much agree with Snape in this situation.
Yeah, which in a way, you know, you hate Snape, but at the same time, like, the one time that, again, Harry is being a real, real dum-dum, Snape right. is right.
Yeah, yeah. I don't love the source, but excellent points. Because Harry is being really stupid and selfish in these situations. Because they have gone to extreme lengths to make sure he's safe. And Harry's kind of like, la, 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 I'm going to do whatever I want. So good for you, Snape.
Yeah. You heard it from Jess first. Good on you, Snape.
In this specific instance, I don't know how I feel about the rest of them, but this instance, he's right.
Yeah. How extraordinarily like your father you are, Potter, Snape said, his eyes glinting. He too was exceedingly arrogant. A small amount of talent on the Quidditch field made him think he was a cut above the rest of us, strutting around the place with his friends and admirers. The resemblance between you is uncanny. My dad didn't strut, said Harry before he could stop himself, and neither do I.
Snape hit this button with Harry, and...
Yeah, and, you know, it's revealing a lot, because, you know, Harry, again, is coming from a position that he has celebrity status. Mm-hmm. Like, his father didn't even have that. Like, and so the fact that Snape is quoting all of this, it shows that, okay, you wish you were the hot jock too, Snape, but you're not.
Right. Yeah. And he's angry and resentful and holding a grudge, as far as we know right now.
Yeah. Snape's grudge. Your father didn't set much store by rules either. Rules were for lesser mortals, not Quidditch Cup winners. His head was so swollen. And Harry, I forgot about this. Harry tells him to shut up, like to his face.
Yeah, this kind of surprised me a little bit too. So he, you know, he's pissed.
What did you say to me, Potter? I told you to shut up about my dad, Harry yelled. I know the truth, all right? He saved your life. Dumbledore told me you wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for my dad.
Ooh, that hit a nerve with Snape, didn't it?
And did the headmaster tell you the circumstances in which your father saved my life, he whispered, or did he consider the details too unpleasant for precious Potter's delicate ears?
So, he doesn't really get into a lot of detail about what exactly what he was, he kind of gives him a vague, like, picture of what happened, but not, he doesn't go into too many details.
No, basically we get the idea that rather than just being some random thing that his father stepped into, it was rather something like created by James himself and like tried to undo it.
Yeah, so he's like, it was his plan to, it sounds like, mess with Snape, and then James backed out at the last minute.
There was nothing brave about what he did. He was saving his own skin as much as mine. Had their joke succeeded, he would have been expelled from Hogwarts.
Hmm. So I'm just going to say I, because I'm the newbie to the Harry Potter world, don't know what this is, but it had to be pretty severe. I guess it's not as severe as more severe than dressing up as a Dementor. But so I guess, yeah, I'll find
out. Clearly, because that doesn't do crap at Hogwarts.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. You know, again, interesting. Obviously, this will be revealed. And in this book, actually, will be revealed.
Oh, good. I'm
very
curious.
So he comes across the Marauder's map.
Yes. And, you know, with the Marauder's map, I kind of thought, given the origins, there had to be, like, some sort of protection that was built into this for the sake of the owner, given that it was kind of like the jokey people who Fred and George admire greatly. There had to be something. You knew it wasn't going to reveal itself to Snape.
Yeah. What did you think about how it protected itself?
It's a little childish, but, you know, it got the job done, it sounds like, and it was a pretty easy way to disguise it. I mean, it also made sense. Like, of course, maybe you would be trying to, like, rib your friends or whatever and giving them a little, playing a little game. So I think they were very wise with their disguising this.
Mr. Padfoot would like to register his astonishment that an idiot like that ever became a professor.
That's awesome.
And Harry's like waiting for the axe to fall.
Right. Yeah. This has got to be a very nerve-wracking situation for Harry to deal with, because it's he doesn't know what's going to happen either. He just knows that here he has this document and it's so far so good, you know, but he doesn't know if at the end it's just going to like throw some slams at him, at Snape, and then reveal itself to say something more.
Mm-hmm. And to Harry's utter bewilderment, Snape calls in Lupin.
Which, so this made me wonder about Lupin and Snape's relationship. We have I don't think it's romantic, so don't read into that, anybody. But I'm just the fact that, you know, Snape's kind of dropped by Lupin's office to give him some potion. We have this weird situation and Snape is like, hey, let me dial in Lupin to help solve this. So I'm really interested to learn about their relationship throughout the series.
And Lupin tries to say, oh, probably from a joke shop, most likely. Indeed, said Snape. You think a joke shop could supply him with such a thing? You don't think it more likely he got it directly from the manufacturers?
This, to me, made me think that Snape thinks Harry Potter is more than he is because, I don't know, I thought this was pretty interesting accusation to make.
Yeah. And suggesting that Harry must automatically know who these people are, these like trickster guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Fred and George are kind of known jokesters, I guess, at Hogwarts. I don't really think Harry, that's not really his, like, his thing, you know, at Hogwarts. So I didn't understand why Snape made that leap other than just being irritated at Harry's general existence.
Mm-hmm. And so then Ron comes bursting in, is like, I gave Harry that stuff.
Yeah, what I mean, I don't know, that he kind of probably knew that was the route that Ron, that Harry was going to go. So
yeah, and Lupin just clings to that and goes with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Lupin probably has some inclination, but he also knows that Snape is going to hold Harry's feet to the fire. So
me rereading this, even though I know, you know, the dynamics of everything, I'm surprised that Severus lets it go.
I was as well. I thought that he would. So again, the relationship with Lupin, he must really trust him for reasons unknown to me.
Yeah, like I can. Yeah, like trust him and the idea of, you know, I think Snape assessing like how much rapport has Lupin built up at this point with Dumbledore, because Snape has been in Hogwarts longer, but at the same time, Snape is an asshole and doesn't make himself agreeable to anyone.
Right, right. He's not. Yeah, he's not very well liked individual, and but I don't know. This was kind of a strange exchange that I thought was headed in a much worse direction for Harry, but turned out okay.
Yeah, and of course, Lupin does the whole "I'm very disappointed in you."
I justified, because I am disappointed in them as well.
Yeah, which of course makes Harry feel worse than any sort of screaming or whatever that Snape could have done.
Yeah, and I think Lupin kind of echoes, without saying too much, echoes Snape's sentiments that all these people are doing all this work to protect you and you're just being kind of, you know, flip about that.
La 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 la.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So they end up heading up back to Gryffindor Tower and come across Hermione. Come to have a good gloat, said Ron savagely as she stopped in front of them. No, said Hermione. She was holding a letter in her hands and her lips were trembling. I just thought you ought to know. Hagrid lost his case. Buckbeak is going to be executed.
And then I had to stop reading.
Are two chapters.
Yeah, what a bummer way to end this chapter. I'm hoping that doesn't happen. And I will find out in the next two chapters, so.
Alrighty then, just shall we turn to Gothic Geek Out?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, so what Gothic elements did you glean from these chapters?
Well, I think I kind of gave myself away that I was going to go with the Shrieking Shack because of the whole nature of a haunted house. And if you listen to Amy and I's other podcast that I was on for a while, Sublimely Gothic, we definitely had a couple of really good Gothic haunted house stories from, you know, kind of the original Gothics to more modern Gothic stories. I think Amy and I both really liked Riley Sager's Home Before Dark, which was kind of a haunted house story. So that was the element that I was very attracted to, given our kind of joint appreciation for that genre of Gothic.
Mm-hmm. What I got out of it was, yeah, it was not directly the Shrieking Shack, but more specifically, ironically, Harry's use of the mud, like basically pretending to be a ghost, but not really.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Because just the idea of, you know, a in a gothic novel, as we discussed many, many times on Sublimely Gothic, that it can go in three different directions. It can go into the, there are truly supernatural elements. It can go into the, there is a rational explanation, or it could be totally left ambiguous and the reader's left to decide which.
That's an, so like basically Harry's ghost impersonation, that's, you're totally right. That's a very gothic thing that we see. I don't know why I keep referencing the 13th Tale, but that's the thing that I'm thinking of. I guess because it was really good.
It made such a strong impression on you. I'm so happy.
It really did. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I was able to get a hard cover of that at Goodwill for $2.50.
Oh, man. I'll have to keep my eye out. Go read that book if you like that element, these elements of Harry Potter. I mean, and not like it's a bit much more serious in the 13th Tale, but.
But yeah, just the idea that maybe, you know, someone is trying to fabricate a supernatural element to achieve a certain end, whether it's to scare someone out of a house or, again, scare someone to death and take their inheritance. Like, you know, there could be a whole bunch of motivations, but pretend, like, trying to fabricate a ghost, that does happen if we're going the rational route.
Absolutely. Yes. That's a good one. I like that gothic element.
Mm-hmm. All righty then. And now we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And the tarot card that I drew for these chapters was the Six of Cups.
Okay. Six of Cups.
I know Six of Cups is very much about revisiting the past and childhood.
Okay.
So let's see. The Six of Cups is a card that takes you back to the happy memories from your past, whether as a child, teenager, or young adult. You may simply be revisiting those memories in your mind, or you may travel back to your childhood home or reconnect with your childhood friends. You could go to a high school reunion or reconnect with an old buddy. The Six of Cups often shows an increased level of harmony and cooperation in your relationships. You are ready to give and receive without expectation.
So my knee-jerk assessment with this would be just Harry's use of the Patronus charm, since that's kind of a, not specifically childhood, but a positive happy memory from his past is what makes that happen.
Because I think we went into detail why specifically does it have to be the past as rather the present in terms of just needing a happy thought,
right? Yeah, or like a fantasy or something. So that's because go ahead.
No, for me, it's not so much happy, but going to the childhood, I immediately go towards Snape, mm-hmm. because in disciplining Harry, he very quickly descends into, you're just like your dad, who I was clearly ridiculously jealous of because he was the hot jock and I wasn't.
Yeah, that really put a chip on his shoulder, so much so, as far as I know now, that he is like continuing to punish the
children
son.
As a 30-something-year-old man.
Yes. Like, oh my gosh. But, and whose parents are not even alive. You know, it's not like he can continue to have this. You know, I know people when they...
His parents were brutally murdered. Like, yeah. That wasn't enough to like, okay, that makes up for the fact that I didn't get along with this guy.
Yeah. This just is adding, you know... I was in agreement with Snape for one bit of thought and feelings, but the rest of it, Snape in general's an asshole. So
yeah, the Six of Cups invites you to get in touch with your inner child and experience the fun, freedom, and innocence that comes with being a young child again. You might like to sit down with an adult coloring book. Blah blah blah. That's all. When you give yourself permission to be playful, spontaneous, and creative, you connect with your more authentic self and your intuition. Well, again, in terms of inner child or exuberance of childhood, I think of Harry at last being able to practice with his firebolt.
Oh, yeah. That's a gleeful moment for him and Ron.
For both of them. Yeah. I don't know if it's Patronus heavy or worthy, but it is a good, solid memory of childhood. Like my first time on my fancy firebolt broomstick.
Yeah, yeah. I think like if we're talking about the childlike aspect too, kind of some of the origin of the Marauder's Map was kind of in a jokey, in a entertaining way, I guess. I don't know, for the comedy's sake. I like your application of the card better than my map. So
okay. And now we move on to the rune of the day. So the rune I picked out is known as Othila.
Okay.
So, and the keywords for this rune is heritage, tradition, inheritance, ancestral property, and family ties.
Okay.
Othila, the final rune of Eldar Futhark, is the rune of heritage and speaks to what we come into the world with in terms of who we are born to and raised by. This rune may refer to a literal inheritance of land or other property, but it is also about the intangible things we inherit from our family of origin, for better or for worse. No matter how we may resemble or differ from the rest of our family, no matter how far from home we have traveled or how independently we have established ourselves, all of us carry traits, beliefs, habits, and influences from our family of origin.
Okay. Wow.
I immediately go to Snape, immediately honing in on Harry is just like his arrogant father.
That is where I was going to go as well. So we are on the same page. That makes the most sense in the application of the rune to these couple of chapters and Snape's stepping back into the past when dealing with a student of one of his like nemesis, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of just inheriting things, I think of the Marauder's Map, which was in essence a sort of friendship inherited from Fred and George.
Oh, I like that. That's nice. That is a cool inheritance. And I guess, you know, as if we're talking about things like that, the invisibility cloak, which shows up in these chapters, which Harry, you know, got from Dumbledore, which was from his dad. So interesting.
And then in many readings, Othila points to a tension between the traditions you inherited and the current way you're approaching life. Perhaps you have a lifestyle that your parents and or ancestors would not approve of, or perhaps you are finding it necessary to hide your true self and conform to the dominant worldview of those around you.
Well, in this instance, I feel like Harry is being constantly reminded how much like James he is and how he's just basically, I guess that would almost bother me. And some people would want to rebel against that. Like, oh, you're just like your father. You're just trying to be this cool Quidditch jock person and chill on that. At least that's what Snape's interpretation of it is. So,
yeah, I think of tension between like, you have a lifestyle your parents or ancestors would not approve of. Well, Harry is engaging in a lifestyle of, you know, rolling the dice with fate and tempting. Like, you know, Sirius Black has broken into the building twice and I'm still going to go to Hogsmeade.
Yeah, smart.
Which I don't think his parents, if they were alive, would approve of.
Definitely not. I agree with that. I think James may have done that, based on the little I know of James, may have done the same thing. And as far as we can tell, I also realize that Snape is definitely convinced that James would have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anything else?
I don't for that. No, no.
Okay, then. And now we can move on to fan fiction time.
So what came to me, I'm going to deviate from what I originally wrote, but when we were talking about the Crookshanks Scabbers situation, what if Hermione was not taking all those classes? Might she have handled that situation differently? And I think that, you know, what you've said is if it was a deviation from her personality, then maybe, but I kind of wonder if some of her reactions, she's apparently bursting into tears all the time too, because of, you know, she's doing all this work. I'm just wondering how she would be with the Scabbers Crookshanks incident. Maybe she would have paid more attention to Crookshanks. I don't know, if she wasn't so overloaded with classwork.
Yeah, that is a very good point, because I never really connected it in that exact way, but you're absolutely right. I think if she wasn't yes, Hermione is proud and stubborn, but honestly, if she wasn't taking that many classes, she would have the mental space to be able to, you know, think, oh, I need to keep Crookshanks separate from Scabbers. Like, it's such a little thing, you know, but again, when you're stressed out and overwhelmed, the tiniest task seems like this, you know, insurmountable, you know, challenge. So, yeah, I think it would definitely have had a difference.
I think it's a cure. I mean, and I'm just applying it probably a little too personally. Just, you know, I know how I am when I'm stressed and I look at things and I go, oh my God, I cannot believe I did that. But obviously I'm thinking about a million other things. So it'd be interesting to see if that were explored. But what was your fan fiction this week?
Oh, I thought of a few. Cool. My first one was, what if there really was a Dementor at the game?
So that begs the question. Obviously, I guess we understand from Lupin, his charm wouldn't have worked, right?
Well, that's the question. Like, would it have worked, or would it have worked to the same potency if Harry were under the same, been subjected to the same influences, or like, you know, what the reaction that the Dementor elicits? Because we've been told in his Dementor lessons, he's still producing the Patronus with his bug art, which is mimicking that scenario. So it begs the question of how much do you think that Harry would have been able to produce the Patronus with a real Dementor with all the Dementor's effects? I tend to veer in the direction that he probably could have, but maybe at least defended, like, started the Patronus, at least, you know, held it off enough for someone else, like Dumbledore or anything, to step in.
Yeah, I think, that's, to me, when you were talking through that, I was like, well, Dumbledore is, I don't know if that's in the back of Harry's mind a little bit. Like, if the Dementors are there, he's got backup, you know, he's not in it alone.
Or I think that even if he could produce the Patronus with the same effect that he did against Malfoy, if he were able to produce it to that level against a real Dementor, maybe he could have done it, but it certainly would have taken all of his, like, power and headspace, and he would not have caught the Snitch, at least at that point.
Yeah. I'm glad it wasn't a real Dementor. I really did think it was upon the initial reading. I did not think that Malfoy would stoop to that level, but as soon as that happened, my thought was like, good for you, Harry. Your work is done. And then I actually kind of thought when reading it in the initial reading, like, oh, and now he's like shown everybody that he's capable of this. But then it turned out to be, you know, if anything, he did show everybody that he is capable of, you know, doing that charm. But its effectiveness, unfortunately, wasn't tested as much as we'd liked it to have been.
Yeah. And I think of, you know, there's not only the immediate how Harry responds, but then the wider sociopolitical. If a Dementor truly had shown up and was, you know, whether by Harry or by Dumbledore, was subdued, what would that mean? I would like to think that Dumbledore would use that as justification that these things cannot follow orders, you know, get them out of my school.
That is, because that is kind of, we know that Dumbledore is not happy that these are there at all. So he would probably, I don't think he would want Harry to be freaked out by any means, but he would welcome the opportunity to kick them out.
And then I thought of another scenario. What was it? It was something in regards to Snape. Can't think of it because there's so many things. Like, what if Snape had, you know, realized it was a map?
Okay. Yeah. If he, yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, he would have confiscated it probably immediately. And then I don't know if that would result in Harry being expelled, but it definitely, I mean, I don't know what Harry has to do to be expelled, to be quite honest.
I think he would have to kill someone.
Yeah, that would probably might get him expelled. But
I don't think there's any specific school rule that says thou shalt not have a GPS map of the entire school.
No, unfortunately. And I don't know. I guess they, maybe after they discovered the map, it would be there. But
I remember. What if Sirius Black had gone for Harry's bed?
Oh, that's so funny you say that, because that was going to be what I was about to offer up too. I don't know, because Sirius is very confusing to me. He keeps getting in these situations where he's almost at, you know, to Harry. I guess he probably would have, I don't think he would have killed him right there. I think he would have, because again, I'm not convinced that he's going to kill him anyway. I don't think he really wants to. The other thing is, given the shredded curtains or whatever, he was in his animal form at this point. So, but then Ron said he saw him. So I don't know. I don't know. What do you think?
I think if he got to Harry's bed, again, I think you're right. He wouldn't have killed Harry outright. Like, not so much with I think the knife may have been, again, just in case anyone showed up. And I think the having a knife is a testament, I think, to, we were debating this, I think it kind of points in the direction that Sirius Black does not have a wand on him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he has to have some other sort of defense.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it was some a form of self-defense. And I think, again, I think he would have just, like, shoved Harry's face with a cloth full of chloroform or whatever and have him knock him out.
Yeah, that sounds pretty on point. Yeah, you know, I guess for some reason, I think we're both agreeing. We know that he was going to take him to a second location is what I think we're both saying. He's not going to leave him at Hogwarts. And because I just feel like if he does have malicious intent, I don't think it's, you know, he's going to kill him and run off. There's something that he wants from Harry that he's going to get somehow, some way.
And those are our chapters. Tune in next time where we will get chapters 15, where we will listen, blah, 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 blah. Can't do a conclusion. Where we will go over chapters 15 and 16. The Quidditch final and Professor Trelawney's prediction. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.